Mike Dell's World number 168 for October 6th, 2010.
I've enjoyed the summer season, this go-round. The mountain streams and the wooded trails. The sun was pleasing, her benefits were found in every holler, hill and vale. And still I thrill to feel the flagging of the heat when the dog days of August come to heel. Into the shadows at September's gentle feet, it brings a joy, but that ain't all I feel. Early this morning, I was up before the sun, putting the storm windows in. I mink oiled my boots and I polished my gun. I laid away my summer sin. And through the window while shaving, I see with a cold draft of dread, crimson and golden all over the trees and in the glass, the gray all on my head.
And the shock of October won't knock you over. You knew it would come all along. Treasure September, but always remember October rolls over so strong, and summer is gone.
The night is falling, the skies pink and dim. A wind walks the land. Frost comes calling, the grass is looking grim, and the gun is in my hand. Old man Winter's a liar and a cheat, but he ain't due for a spell. I've got two shells, and if the first one don't beat him, last, my friends, is fairly well.
And the shock of October won't knock you over. You knew it would come all along. Treasure September, but always remember October rolls over so strong.
Summer gone.
That was Jack Erdy, and the song was called October. That's off of musicalley.com. Hey, welcome to October. You're listening to Mike Dell's World. And it's sponsored by me. Yeah, we don't have any sponsors for this quarter. Decided to take a break from that and just concentrate on the normal podcasting thing. And we'll worry about sponsors at a future date there. Here, let me turn that up a little bit. Maybe I don't need to, but sounds better in my earphones. Hey, a little quick update here. See, been a rather busy September. guess the last podcast was right around September 11th when I did the retrocast from the old Benzoid Report 5th anniversary 9/11 show there. That was kind of interesting to listen to, I thought. So that's why I put it out. And this week, I've got a couple things I want to play for you. Along the lines of, something interesting that came up on a forum that I frequent there. It's called Glock Talk. Of course, it's all gun rights and all that, but there's a section in there called Cop Talk. And some of the guys in there, that are police officers, turned me on to a couple of YouTube videos that I found quite interesting, so I've scarfed the audio off of them. And it's kind of funny. I actually had to put, not had to, but I actually put some of it into practice about a week ago. I was driving home from lunch, or not driving home, driving back to work from lunch. And of course, I work the overnight shift, so my lunch is 4 in the morning. So it was probably about 4:15 in the morning, and turned down the road, headed back to work there, and state police lights me up, and I pull over. And he come up to the window, and he used kind of an interesting tactic. He says, he didn't ask me, if I knew why he pulled me over. He said, "How long's that headlight been out?" And of course, I actually knew the headlight was out, and I actually had a new headlight in the glove box that I hadn't had a chance to change yet. But, not wanting to incriminate myself in any way, I said, "Which one?" And so he actually went in front of the car and said, "Oh, that's the driver's side." I said, "Oh, okay, cool. Well, I'll get that fixed in the morning." And he took my license and registration and all that. And back to his car, run his deal, come back and said, "Have a nice night. You're free to go." And that's all there was to it. And see, the key to that was that I didn't admit that I knew it, because if I had admitted that I knew the headlight was out, he would probably wrote me a fix-it ticket, which doesn't cost anything. It's just an extra hassle for him and for me. In Michigan anyway, the way it works is you get a fix-it ticket like that for a light out or for loud exhaust or whatever. You got 10 days to get it fixed, and then you go show it to a police officer or go down to the courthouse and have one of them come out, and they sign off on the ticket, and you don't owe any money on it. It's just, it's just they want to make sure you get it fixed. So, but rather than getting the fix-it ticket, I think because I didn't lie to him. I didn't say, "No, I didn't know it was out." I said, "Which one?" Answered his question with a question. And like I said, I have no disrespect for police officers. I got friends that are police officers, and I went through the Citizens Police Academy here in Traverse City a couple of years ago, and that was really interesting. And like I said, I have no disrespect, but they've got a legal job to do, and you've got legal rights that doesn't make their job any harder or easier. And, they'll tell you right to your face they don't really care. But if you do say something, they can and will use it against you. So anyway, I'm going to play this first clip. It's called "Never Talk to the Police."
Okay, why you should never talk to the police. Let me just spell it out for you. Let me make it plain to all of you. These are the top 10 reasons. Number one, and this really ought to be good enough. Contrary to what you laymen instinctively and naturally suppose, it cannot help. There is no way it can help. Officer Brooke, you've interviewed thousands of criminal suspects. How many times in your experience have you approached someone, asked if you could ask them some questions because prior to the interview you had some evidence pointing to his possible guilt? And because of the extraordinary persuasiveness and eloquence with which he articulated his innocence, you said, "Oh, sorry, never mind. Bad call, my bad, I won't..." And he talked you out of arresting him. Never. Never. It never happens. I've often asked other criminal defense attorneys, in all of your experience, have you ever once had a case where you looked back in hindsight and said, "Thank God my client talked to the police"? They laugh at me. They say, "You've got to be kidding me." You cannot help you. You can't talk your way out of getting arrested. And contrary to what you might suppose if you never studied the rules of evidence, what you tell the police, even if it's exculpatory, cannot be used to help you at trial. Because it's what we call hearsay. Under the rules of evidence, specifically rule 801 D2A, if you want to look it up, everything you tell the police, as the saying goes, can and will be used against you, but it cannot be used for you. From time to time, I've known attorneys who tried to call to the stand a police officer and say, "Officer, would you tell the jury what my client told you, because what my client told him is actually good for my case?" If you tried that at trial, the prosecutor will object to that as hearsay, and the judge will agree. The police will not be allowed, at your request, to tell the jury what your client told him, no matter how good it may be for your case. It cannot help. Number two, obviously one of the most obvious. If your client is guilty, as many of them are, but even if he's not, even if he's innocent, he may well admit his guilt with no benefit in return. You don't got to admit your guilt the first time they come by to meet with you. In federal court, 86% of all defendants plead guilty at some point before trial. Number three, even if your client is innocent and he denies his guilt and almost entirely tells the truth, odds are good he will easily get carried away and tell some little lie or make some little mistake that will hang him. So he goes in there and he meets with the police. He says, "I don't know what you're talking about. I was nowhere near there. I didn't kill him. I've never killed anybody. I don't have a gun. I've never had a gun. I've never touched a gun in my life. I was nowhere near Virginia Beach that night." That last line was a lie. He went over the top. He was getting carried away. He got into this groove. He started saying all kinds of things, almost all of them true, that he knew would tend to exculpate himself. Then he got carried away and just said one thing that wasn't true. And unfortunately for him, they can prove that it wasn't true. He may be convicted on that basis alone. Because even if your client is innocent and only tells the truth and doesn't say anything that is false, let's assume he gives the police nothing but the truth and he is totally innocent, he will always give the police some information that can be used to help convict him. Always. For example, suppose you tell this to the police. Here's what your client tells to the police in his denial of guilt. "I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't kill Jones. I don't know who did. I wasn't anywhere near that place. I don't have a gun. I've never owned a gun in my life. I don't even know how to use a gun. Yeah, sure, I never liked the guy, but who did? I wouldn't kill him. I've never hurt anybody in my life, and I would never do such a thing." Let's suppose every word of that is true, 100% of it is true. What will the jury hear at trial? "Officer Brooke, was there anything about this, your interrogation, your interview with the suspect, that made you concerned that he might be the right one?" "Yes, there was. He confessed to me that he never liked the guy." And then the prosecutor will put that up in big letters, and he'll say, "Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, it's pretty clear that we've got the right guy here. We've proven that he was in Virginia Beach that night. That's opportunity. And remember, Officer Brooke admitted that after extended questioning, he was finally able to get the defendant to admit that he never liked the guy. There's your motive. Motive plus opportunity. Wham, bam." Please. The United States Supreme Court, don't take my word for this, in Ohio versus Ryan, the Supreme Court of the United States said, quote, "One of the Fifth Amendment's basic functions is to protect innocent men who otherwise might be ensnared by ambiguous circumstances. Truthful responses of an innocent witness, as well as those of a wrongdoer, may provide the government with incriminating evidence from the speaker's own mouth." See, it's not just some criminal defense attorney telling you this. Even the Supreme Court says I'm right. Allman versus United States, the Supreme Court said, more than 50 years ago, eerily prophetic. They said, "Too many Americans, even those who should be better advised, view this privilege as a shelter for wrongdoers. They too readily assume that those who invoke it are either guilty of crime or commit perjury in claiming the privilege." That's not true, and it never has been. But it gets worse. Can it get worse? It can. Number five, even if your client is innocent and only tells you the truth and does not tell the police anything incriminating, which, by the way, is almost impossible to pull this off. I mean, imagine talking to the police for 2, 3, 4 hours, and somebody like him can't somehow manage to extract from you something that could be used to help convict you. But even if you could pull it off, there's still a grave chance that his answers can and will be used to crucify you in a court of law if the police, no offense, don't recall his testimony with 100% accuracy. Even if your client is innocent and only tells the truth and doesn't tell them anything incriminating, and his statement is videotaped, his answers can be used to crucify him. You might say, "Wait, how can that happen?" I insisted, in my insistence, I called the police and I said, "Look, if you want to talk to my client, you can talk to him, but only if you videotape the whole thing. I don't want there to be any debate between the two of you over what happened." "Okay, we'll videotape the whole thing." If the police don't recall their questions with 100% accuracy, he'll be convicted on that statement alone. For example, suppose a man goes to the police, they say, "We're investigating a possible murder, a shooting." And the guy says, quote, "I don't know who killed Jones, Officer Brooke, with all due respect. It wasn't me. I've never touched or fired a gun in my life." You're gambling with your client's life. And police officers can very easily make a mistake like that, just as so many of you did just a few minutes ago, about whether you recalled having heard me say something about somebody actually being shot. Police make mistakes, innocently, inadvertently, unintentionally. Any statement, no matter how exculpatory it may seem on its face, can be used to crucify you all by itself if the police are either willing to lie, not likely, or if they just have an innocent misrecollection of the details as to what they did and did not tell you before you told them what you said. All of these, by the way, all of these problems disappear if you take Justice Jackson's advice and say, thank you very much, officer, but no thanks. How about this one? Here we go. Now, here's the most surprising of all. I've saved the most surprising one for last. Let's suppose you've got the following scenario. Your client's thinking about talking to the police. He acts like he says, I've got nothing to hide. They think that I killed somebody in Virginia Beach last night. Well, this is what your client tells you in confidence. I don't know who robbed that store. It wasn't me. In fact, I've got a pretty good alibi. I wasn't even in Virginia Beach that night, last night. I was 4 hours away visiting my mother in the Outer Banks. Unfortunately, no, I did not pay for gas with a credit card. I used cash, and so I've got no witnesses that can prove I was there except my word, and of course, Mama, for what that's worth, which is nothing. So your client says, so the police want to talk to me, and I want to seem cooperative, so what I'll do is I'll tell them that I was in the Outer Banks last night. Now, there's nothing on its face incriminating about any of that. He's not admitting motive. He's not admitting opportunity. He's not admitting that he was there. How on earth could this come back to haunt us? How on earth could this come back to be used against us? Even if your client is innocent and only tells the truth and doesn't tell the police anything incriminating, and the entire interview, questions and answers, are videotaped, even his truthful answers can be helped to use crucify even an innocent man if the police, through no fault of theirs, end up in the possession of any evidence, even mistaken and unreliable evidence, that anything your client told them was false, even if in fact it was true. Let's suppose I go ahead and I meet with the police. I think I got nothing to hide. I tell them I was in the Outer Banks last night, officer. How can that be used to convict me? By itself, it cannot. It cannot help at all by itself. But what if I later find out, to my horror, after I put my cards on the table, that they've got a witness, a girl that I went to high school with, an unimpeachable witness, we've never been enemies, she'd have no reason to lie. She swears, she thinks she saw me in Virginia Beach last night, a couple of blocks away from that store, about an hour before it was robbed. Now, her testimony by itself isn't going to help the prosecutor. Hell, if she's all they've got, I'll get this case thrown out before trial. But if, like an idiot, I talked to the police and I told them the truth, I told them I was in the Outer Banks, and now, lo and behold, tragically, it turns out they've got a witness, a false, mistaken, confused, but sincere and credible witness who could testify that I was here in Virginia Beach, now they're likely to get a conviction. Because what they'll do, I've just turned this cop and this woman into the government star witnesses. They'll put Officer Brooke on to testify about how my client lied to him about being in the Outer Banks, and then they'll put on this girl who otherwise would have not even helped their case at all, who will testify, no, that's not true, that was a lie. I saw Mr. Duane's client here in Virginia an hour before the robbery, not so far from the store. By herself, she would not have helped the government in any significant way. But what I have just done, you see, is given them the other part of the puzzle, and now I'm doomed. Just ask them. On the left, we have Martha Stewart. She was the victim, the subject of an extensive government investigation that was looking into the possibility that she was guilty of violations of certain federal laws, securities laws, fraud kinds of things. They couldn't pin that on her, but they were able to get a conviction because she denied it. Talking to the police and later to someone at the shareholders, she said, no, it's not true. I was not guilty. So they charged her with lying to federal investigators. And they got a conviction, and she was sentenced to 5 months in prison. Marion Jones, on the right side, another person who would still be out today if she had always taken the advice that I'm giving you now. She was asked if she had ever used steroids, a controlled substance. And instead of taking the fifth, she said, no, I never took steroids when I won those Olympic gold medals. Later on, it turned out that she was lying. She worked out a deal. She pled guilty. She admitted that she was lying. And she, over her strenuous, tear-filled objection, even though she has two young children, was just recently sentenced to prison for 6 months. The guy who sold her the steroids, the pusher, he got only 4 months. But she got 6 months because she lied to the police and said that she did not do it. So, my advice to you, Justice Jackson was right. Any sane, competent lawyer in his right mind will always tell every client under all circumstances, I don't care if you're innocent. I don't care if it's the truth. If it's the truth, great. We'll tell the jury all about it. There'll be time enough to put our cards on the table. So, keep your mouth shut. Don't answer any questions. Let's take the fifth. You'll be glad that you did. God bless America.
Anyway, they make some pretty good points in there, or he does. Even if you're telling the truth, and even if everything checks out, if you talk about it in the field, you know, that can be turned around and twisted, and it's more on the lawyers than, like the prosecutor and the defense attorneys and all that than it is the police officer, but, police officer's got to say what he's got to say. And, I don't think the police are crooked or anything like that. That's their job. Their job is to enforce the laws and be a really good witness, and they're trained for that. And the lawyer's job is to manipulate it to make their client win, if their client's the state or you. So, anyway, be real careful what you say to a police officer in a professional encounter, meaning, you know, if you're pulled over or you're arrested or any of that sort of thing, you know. And I don't expect any of you to get arrested or anything, but you never know. That stranger things have happened. And innocent people are sitting in jail because they ran their mouth. So, you know, it's totally within your right to take the Fifth Amendment. You got another lawyer here, and this one's more about a traffic stop. And the video's really good, but you can get the gist of it from the audio. But he has a couple of scenarios about traffic stops, and this was recorded, you know, later in the guy's talk, I think, but you'll get the point. And this is, you know, how to handle a traffic stop.
Officers hold an overwhelming power advantage, not only because they represent the power and authority of the state, but also because most people are unprepared to handle the pressure and confusion of such situations. Whether or not you break the law, this video is designed to explain what the law is and how you can legally and properly assert your constitutional rights during even the most stressful police encounters. By knowing and exercising your rights, you become a better citizen. In addition, you'll be more prepared to balance the power between yourself and police, who often try to get you to waive your rights. Although you're generally better off respectfully asserting your rights, doing so is no guarantee against police misconduct, but showing the police that you know your rights can make them cautious about violating your rights. If you slept through high school civics class, now's the time to wake up. Here's why. If you give up your rights, as many people naively do during police encounters, these rights can no longer protect you. The Fourth Amendment states, in part, that the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated. The Fifth Amendment states, in part, that no person shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. The Sixth Amendment states, in part, that in all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. Let's take a closer look at the ways Darryl handles himself in the two parallel scenes you just watched. At the beginning of both scenes, Darryl turned the car off and placed his hands on the steering wheel after he was pulled over. This is a good safety precaution because officers like to see your hands for their own safety. So wait until the officer asks to see your paperwork before retrieving your documents. But that's where the similarities end. In the first scene, Darryl waived his rights as soon as he started talking to the officer.
Do you know why I pulled you over?
I guess I was speeding, sir.
Darryl just gave up his Fifth Amendment protection against self-incrimination by admitting to breaking a law. There's no need to confess to the officer that you were speeding or breaking a law. He's playing gotcha games with you. Instead, when an officer approaches your window, start by calmly and courteously asking this first question.
Good afternoon, officer. Why'd you pull me over?
Good move. Don't play into the officer's gotcha games, because you can't win. See how Darryl only opened his window partway, enough to talk to the officer and pass him his license and registration? This makes it more difficult for the officer to stick his nose in the car and claim he smells or sees something. However, if the officer asks you to roll down the window all the way, you should probably do it.
All right, everyone step out of the car, please.
All three exit the car. Darryl leaves his driver's side door conspicuously open. By leaving the car door wide open, Darryl made his car an easier target for the officer to search.
You don't have any drugs in here. You don't mind if I take a look, do you?
No.
Did Darryl mean, no, I don't have any drugs in the car? Or, no, officer, you can't take a look in the car? Unfortunately, the officer's compound question tricked Darryl into complying with his search request. And since Darryl didn't say anything to the contrary, he gave up his Fourth Amendment protection by consenting to a search. Now watch as Darryl consents again to the search of his bag, even though he knows he's got illegal items in there.
Daryl, let him look in the damn bag!
Bad advice from Troy, and a bad idea for Daryl to let himself be intimidated by the officer's threats. If you have contraband, and you consent to a police officer's search request, you will be arrested.
Daryl, this is your bag, which makes this your marijuana, am I right?
Yeah, that's mine. It's just a little bud. It's no big deal.
Daryl should bite his tongue. Now is definitely not the time for him to confess or voice his opinions about marijuana laws. The officer is not your priest, and he's not your psychologist. Police are not paid to keep your secrets. They're paid to find, arrest, and help prosecute you. So anything you say can and probably will be used against you in court. In the second scene, Daryl skillfully blocked the officer's continuous attempts to search his car.
Why'd you lock your car? Don't you think your car's safe here?
Habit. Are you detaining us, officer, or are we free to go now?
Listen closely to that line again.
Are you detaining us, officer, or are we free to go now?
This is the right thing to say for two reasons. One, Daryl is responding to the officer's question with his own question, which keeps him from falling prey to the officer's gotcha games. Two, instead of waiting for the officer to give him permission to leave, Daryl is dismissing himself from the encounter by asking if he is free to go.
You don't have anything to hide, do you?
No, officer. I don't consent to any searches, sir.
This could be one of the most important lines you may ever have to deliver in your entire life.
I don't consent to any searches, sir.
Daryl remains courteous, but is not intimidated by this all-too-common tactic.
If the dogs find anything you're not supposed to have, I'm going to throw your ass in a jail cell overnight with some very bad men who would love to do some very bad things to two skinny boys like you two. Do you understand your choice?
Your rights do not disappear just because an officer threatens to call in the dogs. And refusing a search does not give the officer the legal right to search or detain you. Finally, did you notice how Daryl graciously accepted the traffic ticket? Never complain about a ticket, especially when you know how much worse a traffic stop could become. And never let an officer try to convince you that he'll rip up your ticket if you consent to a search. If this happens, just ask for the ticket, because you can always contest it later in traffic court. And being in traffic court is always better than criminal court. The Supreme Court has generally ruled that police officers do not need a warrant to search your car during a traffic stop if they have probable cause to believe something illegal is present, although there are important exceptions. The precise meaning of probable cause is fuzzy. Basically, probable cause means that the police must have some evidence to believe that criminal activity is going on in order to legally search your car. In other words, an officer's hunch without evidence that you're up to no good is not enough to search or arrest you. Before searching, he must observe something more tangible. For example, if the officer sees marijuana, a pipe or a roach, a judge will conclude that the officer was justified in doing the search. This is what's known as the plain view rule. Police do not need a search warrant in order to confiscate any illegal items that they see in plain view. That means keep your private items private and out of sight. Most avoidable police searches occur not because police have probable cause, but because most people, like Daryl, get tricked or intimidated into consenting to search requests. Giving an officer consent to search automatically makes the search legal in the eyes of the law. And in most states, officers are not required to tell you about your right not to consent to a search request. So if you're pulled over by a police officer, do not try to figure out whether or not the officer has enough evidence to legally search you. If he has to ask, it probably means that he doesn't have evidence. You have nothing to lose by refusing to consent to search requests, and everything to lose if you do. If an officer searches you illegally and finds contraband, despite your refusal to consent, your lawyer can file a motion to suppress or throw out the evidence in court. If the judge agrees that the officer's search violated your constitutional rights, he'll grant the motion to suppress. Your charges would then be dismissed, and you'd be free to go.
And one thing I noticed about this video that I don't really agree with, of course, it was actors, you know, playing out the parts, but, you know, it kind of painted the cop as a bad guy, and I don't think that was the case, so, yeah, whatever. I just thought those were interesting videos and interesting audio from the videos. Jeez, I don't know what's going on with my audio here, speaking of audio. It was a little hot that time. Anyway, got a couple other things I want to play here. Got a song from a group. I don't know if I've talked about them before, but it's the Ukulele Orchestra of Great Britain, and it's really cool. It's five ukulele players and an acoustic bass player, and they're pretty good singers too. But this song here starts out with "Fly Me to the Moon," and it's actually a compilation of, I want to say, four or five songs that they sing simultaneously, and they're songs that you'll recognize, and you won't believe that they go together as good as they do. So anyway, here's the Ukulele Orchestra of Great Britain.
The moon, and let me play among those stars. Let me see what spring is like on Jupiter and Mars. In other words, hold my hand. In other words, darling, kiss me. I begin the great love story that is older than the sea, the great love story that belongs to you and me. Dum dum dee doo da dum dee dum dee dee. Where do I start? Strumming my pain with his fingers, telling my life with his words, killing me softly with his song. Killing me softly with his song. On a dark desert highway, cool wind in my hair, warm smell of fajitas rising up through the air. Up ahead in the distance, saw a ship.
First I was afraid, I was petrified, kept thinking I could never live without you by my side. And then I spent so many nights just thinking how you did me wrong. And I grew strong, and I learned how to get along. And so you're back from outer space. I just walked in to find you there with that sad look upon your face. I should have changed the stupid lock, I should have made you leave your key. If I'd have known for just 1 second be back to bother me. Go on now, go. Walk out the door. Just turn around now, 'cause you're not home anymore. Weren't you the one who tried to hold me goodbye? Do you think I'd come along? Do you think I'd lay down and die? We'll survive as long as I know I'm alive. I know I'll stay alive. I've got all I'd like to live, all my love to give. Just trying not to make me survive. wishing in at least expecting it's waiting. I'm saving all my loving for someone who's loving me.
You are listening to Mike on Mike Dell's World Podcast.
Anyway, yeah, those guys with the ukulele orchestra there, pretty good stuff there. Check them out on YouTube. Just look up the Ukulele Orchestra of Great Britain. And there's quite a few videos of them doing cover songs of some pretty cool stuff. And they're awesome musicians. And watching the videos, I forget which song it was, but one of the guys started coughing. And, you know, this is part of the show. And so here's the five of them. They pass a glass of water all the way down the line, and as they do it, the ukulele player to the left of the other one would reach over and play the strings on the person to the right of them's ukulele all the way down until it got to the last guy who was coughing, and then he would take the drink of water, and then they all switched back to their ukulele. Another one of them was everybody was playing one ukulele. They had five people playing one ukulele in the course of this song. It you just got to see it. It's definitely interesting and weird, and you know, if you've been listening to my podcasting over the years, you'll know that interesting and weird is my thing. By the way, I've been trying to figure this out. I don't know the exact date that I put out Benzoid Report number 1, but I know it's got to be somewhere, you know, I don't know. I'm thinking it was either spring 2005, or it might have been about now. Might have been in 2004. So I don't know. I'm thinking it was 2005. So I'm going to have to rack my brain. Hey, if anybody has any of the early Benzoid reports, please let me know. I would love to get a copy. I am missing, let me bring it up here on the computer, if I can. I don't know if this will screw me up or not. No, it's working. But the earliest Benzoid report that I have is number 35. And if the date here is correct, that was in 2006. So, you know, I don't know for sure when I started. Let's see. Okay, yeah. It was in July of 2006. I did Benzoid Report number 35. But I don't have any of the files prior to 35. So if any of you out there just happen to find those or have those, I would be really interested to have those. I'm sure they're pretty lousy, as if this podcast has ever been anything but slightly under par. But hey, it's my hobby. And like I said, since it's my hobby, that's why I kind of dumped the advertising for this quarter. I may pick it back up in 2011, but I don't know. Never really amounted to a whole lot. And, it was great to have it. And, and I do use GoToMeeting and Citrix products on a regular basis. So, non-sincere, I guess, would be the I don't know, whatever. But anyway, so I'm just going to, get back to my hobby roots on this podcast. Geek of the North, now that one's another different thing. That one is going to be, the more professional broadcasting type show. Of course, I'm laid back, and, anything I do is kind of in the laid back style. Hey, by the way, I was a guest on this show called OS Perspectives. You can find that over at, MrNetcast.com. I was on OS Perspectives, I believe, number 16. It's a video show. Of course, he had some sort of video issue, so you don't get to see my smiling face on video. But I am now set up for video down here. And, if you want to watch video, there's a video feed, which is different than this. I'm not going to video, when I do the Mike Dell's World podcast, because the nice thing about Mike Dell's World podcast is I can do it in private over, however much time I want to take. In fact, I started this yesterday. I had to redo the opening there because I said October 5th, and then never really got done with it, so I figured I'd continue it this morning and get it up on the 6th. And that's the beauty of the hobby podcasting, and that's also the beauty of not doing it live on Ustream or whatever. I'm going to Las Vegas next week for Blog World and New Media Expo, and my cohort there, Todd Cochran, and also Angelo Mandato, both from Raw Voice, and of course Todd does Geek News Central. And by the way, I am a paid blogger at Geek News Central for disclosure purposes here, and I'm also employed by Raw Voice Incorporated in a tech support capacity. But Todd's doing a session at Blog World New Media Expo about what he calls the triple play, and that's audio, video, and streaming. And on certain shows, streaming makes sense, and that's great. Something like this is, this is my hobby audio blog, mainstream sort of thing, where I get to play silly music and sometimes serious topics, such as the, Take the Fifth and the traffic stop stuff. And, I take on topics, and that's great. This is my experimental hobby. I like to do it, and I don't care if I make any money at it. Podcast. And, of course, I've got Mike Dell Unplugged. If you're not subscribed to that, subscribe to that too. That's just me whenever I feel like talking, and doesn't have any music or bumpers or intros, outros, advertising or anything. Just generally just me talking. And of course, I've got the Mike Dell video feed, which is just video. Need I say more? But if you guys are coming to Blog World New Media Expo. I'll be there. I believe we're in booth 517. I'll be there on the show floor on Friday and Saturday of next week. And that'll be fun. It was fun the last couple of years, and it'll be fun again. Of course, this year it's at Mandalay Bay, so, you know, might kind of, totally a different side of town. So I'm kind of looking forward to it. You know, who knows how that'll turn out. I'm sure it'll be fun and all that. I'm not sure what the blueberry party is going to be this year. I believe they're going to have a sweet party, but last year we rented the pepper mill and had quite a turnout there. And I'm sure we'll have something going on, but it's nothing as organized as we had last year. I think this year they're kind of taking a break from that, but. Hey, if you're going to be out in Las Vegas, send me an email or Twitter me, whatever. Maybe we could meet up. I'm going to have some time on my hands. Of course, my lovely wife, Kathy, will be with me. And the only touristy thing we're going to do while we're out there is we've got to go to the Gold and Silver Pawn Shop. And that's, in case you're unaware of what that is, if you watch the History Channel. It's History Channel. Anyway, the show called Pawn Stars. I keep wanting to say Porn Stars, but the show Pawn Stars is filmed there at the Gold and Silver Pawn Shop. And I know right where that is. If you go just past the Stratosphere Towers, I believe it's the next right. Past Stratosphere Towers, if you're heading north on Las Vegas Boulevard, and it's on the right side of the road after you make the right turn towards downtown, but I'm not positive. I know I've driven past it 100 times and never really thought much of it, but I'm going to have to go there. Along with Angelo Mandato, and I both want to get one of Chumley's business cards. But anyway, I digress. Looking forward to that trip. All right. Well, I think I'm going to call this a podcast. I think we're up to almost 48 minutes, 47:30 by my count. And I'm going to play a couple of songs on the way out. Listen to them if you want, or... Or jump to your next podcast, either way. This is a couple of songs from a group called Industrial Jazz Group. One's called The Job Song, and one's called Big Ass Truck. And I'll play both of those, and then that'll be it. And I won't be back afterwards. So, like I said, I'll let you know if you want to, or, in case you want to, not listen to the music, you can now forward it to your next podcast. And thanks for listening, and catch me later.
This guy with horns said there's a cure for your financial state. Don't do the thing you love, cause good things come to those who hate. I'm a powerful man, and though I think you're a slob, if you will flatter me, I'll get you a real job. Give up your dreams, he said, yes, that's the way to have it all. Look at your cousin Neil, he's young, he's rich, he's going bald. He may be dead in a decade or two, but he drives a Porsche, and yes, you can drive one too. Why don't you get a real job, for real? Why don't you get a real job? Why don't you get a real job, for real? Why don't you get a real job? Having just finished school, I never met his type before. You're very kind, I said, and yes, you're right, I'm very poor. But I don't see how your scheme could help me, and so I wonder if you might not tell me more. Why should I get a real job, for real? Why should I get a real job? Why should I get a real job, for real? Why should I get a real job? Well, did you want to be like the people on TV? So bored and jaded and doing something that you've always hated. Casket for your generation. I've been waiting with anticipation. Truth, you'll find, is on the dotted line. So be a good sport. That's what life is for. That's what life is. We'll be right back.
That's all, folks.